Hello, world. This is Louis Patron bringing you Tuesday Talk with Dean Westbloom, Best Black Talk Radio. Thank you for joining me this evening. If you wish to call in and make comment, the number's on the screen in front of you, 646-478-5731. Please let me hear from you. Money is everything today. Excuse me. Money, money, money. None of us have enough, and a few people have too much. I'd like to address at the beginning here the disparity in income between the rich and the poor. And I have a friend down here in the Florida Keys. She's from the Boston area, actually Cape Cod. She has a home here in Cudjoe Key that she visits frequently. She has a PhD. She is a psychologist. And she's a member of the faculty at the University of Massachusetts. And rather brilliant woman. I like to think of her as, excuse me again, she is the Dr. D as compared to and like Dr. Phil. She is the female counterpart of Dr. Phil. Dr. D, full name Dean Rennick. D's a very smart woman. She's very perceptive, very astute. This morning on Facebook, she had a quote, a comment. I don't know if it was hers or she got it out of a book of quotations. From wherever it was, it's very apropos to the discussion, excuse me again, thing, that I'd like to have. And she wrote, and I quote, "If you have a gun, you can rob a bank. If you have a bank, you can rob everybody. If you have a gun, you can rob a bank. If you have a bank, you can rob everybody." And isn't that true today? Very, very true. Now, let's look at a study that was recently made. There was a fellow by the name of David K. Johnson. Johnson's a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's an economist. He wrote last week in Huffington Post basically as follows. He talked about the disparity in income between the rich and the poor, but he put it into numbers that are make it easily understandable. From 1906 to 2011, 47 years, the income of the bottom 9% of the people, the income of the bottom 9% of the population in this country over a 47-year period only increased, only went up $59 over 47 years. Inflation was taken into account to give you the buying power of the dollars. 90% of the people, 47 years, their buying power only went up $59. Whereas, and this is the interesting point, the top 10%, their income, their buying power went up $116,000 over the same period of time. Bottom 9% of the population only went up $59. Top 10, the rich, $116,000. He compared it another way also. If the 90% is equal to 1 inch, then the 10% is equal to 68 feet. Wow. There is a disparity. We always knew this, but did we realize it's so great? It is this great. Now, let's talk about why a little bit. The banks and the bankers have gotten out of hand. Absolutely no question. There was a time 20, 30 years ago where your banker was your next door neighbor. He attended the same church as you did on Sunday. He belonged to the same church society as you did. He went to the same club as you did. He played golf at the same place you did. He played golf with you. He was just like you. Today, they're all big shots, the bankers. They have become thieves and whores, and I say it openly and clearly. Someone call and talk to me about this. You don't have to agree with me. I think bankers generally have become thieves and whores in our society. And why? Let me put it this way. Today, the last several years, there are bank CEOs that are earning as a year-end bonus, anywhere from $10 million to $40 million. You heard me, $10 million to $40 million is a bonus. Wouldn't you like that kind of a bonus in your paycheck? And this has all been documented. This is nothing that Lewis is making up here. That's terrible. That's good. I mean, I envy them. Everyone should make $10 to $40 million a year, folks. We'd all be very, very happy. But it shows you that the banks are out of hand because these are the same banks that caused our recession in 2008 with the mortgage situation where the banks got out of hand and they punished and they screwed the people. That's why you have so many mortgage foreclosures. They broke so many laws. They did so many things wrong, both in the way they loaned and in the manner in which they foreclosed upon people, that they should have been arrested. They should have been charged with a crime. They should have had a trial. Then after conviction, they should have been sent to jail for a long time. But I ask you, and I tell you, not one banker has ever been arrested, charged, or tried for any of the banking problems which have occurred over the past several years. We have been told that the banks, remember we gave all this money to the banks in 2008, 2009 to bail them out, money that they never loaned out to the people as they were supposed to, and we did bail the banks out, and they made a lot of money off of it merely by investing it. We were told that we had to help the banks, we had to give them all this money because the banks were too big to fail. It would hurt our economy nationally and internationally. Now comes the story of HSBC, the British bank. I talked about this maybe last week. I know I talked about it on my television show last week. HSBC, big bank worldwide, headquartered in Great Britain, has many, many offices, branches here in the United States. They recently entered into some sort of civil agreement with the United States government. Seems that the United States branches were money laundering. They were taking primarily drug cartel money from Colombian and Mexican drug lords, and they were filtering it through their banks and making it come out clean in the way they do it with certain investments and so forth, so that this bad money became good money. Well, the United States government became aware of it. They made a major investigation. The investigation was headed by none other than the Attorney General of the United States. It was a big deal. And it was found. You know how much they money laundered? And they admit this in writing. They money laundered $200 trillion, not million, not billion, $200 trillion. Well, they should have been prosecuted. They had them. This agreement, the Attorney General of the United States said 2 weeks ago, we can't prosecute them. Remember, they were too big to fail once. Now they're too big to prosecute because if we do, my God, the national economy and the international economy would be in an upheaval. The economy of the world would suffer. So instead of charging them criminally, they gave them an out with this, it's called a deferred something agreement. They admitted they did wrong the bank. They said, we sinned. We promised to sin no more. And they agreed to pay the fine. The fine that was determined by our government is equivalent to 1 month's profit by the bank for handling this dirty money. Do you know what 1 month's profit was? It's $1.9 billion. This bank, HSBC, made $1.9 billion every month for several years for money laundering drug money. And no one's going to be arrested, no one's going to be charged, no one's going to be tried, convicted, and go to jail. Now, I don't understand this. Too big to fail, now too big to prosecute. If a little guy does something wrong, get caught with a bag of marijuana, an ounce in your pocket, you may do some time. Get caught with 10 ounces, you're going to do time. Rob a gas station, rob a thrift store, you're going to do time. Where you might only rob $50 out of the cash register at the stop, you know, 7 Stop and Save or whatever they're called. You might only rob $50, but you're going to do time. These guys rob $200 trillion. Do you know how many times more than our national debt that is? And they don't get charged or go to jail at all. There's something wrong with our system. There's something wrong with our country when it comes to these things. Now, let me show you. Let me show you by example how someone has enriched himself at your expense and my expense. We have banks And we have financial houses. We have financial advisors today. It's all part of a banking investment system. They all live together and they work together. There's a fellow by the name of Steve Cohen, a mature, respected financier. He is into hedge funds. He's the head, the CEO of SAC Capital Advisors, one of the largest hedge fund companies in the world. And just last week, and I'm not accusing of Steve Cohen of doing anything wrong. I'm not saying that the money he has earned, improperly or wrongfully. I will assume that he did everything right along the way. He did everything honestly along the way. I'll even say that's the way it was, honest and proper. But I want to show you how he lives today and what he can do. And this doesn't make sense to me. This is wild. Last week, in 1 week alone, he spent $60 million on a house in the Hamptons. That's where the rich go to play in the summer on Long Island. $60 million for a house on the water on the Hamptons. Also last week, he spent $155 million for another Picasso. He already had several. He paid in 1 week $60 million for a new home in Manhattan. He paid $155 million for a Picasso. In addition, last week he agreed, or the week before, maybe even 2 weeks ago, he agreed to pay the SEC branch, Security and Exchange Commission of the United States government, $616 million. He's been under investigation for what they call insider trading, which is improper and illegal. But again, there were no charges brought. He has entered into a civil agreement where he agrees that he's going to pay $616 million. But he doesn't say what for. He does not admit to insider trading. He just says, I'll agree to pay this much, and the federal government will cease and desist in pursuing me. He's going to pay the money personally out of a company that he owns 100% of. So basically 1 week, my friends, he spent $60 million on a house in Manhattan, $155 million for Picasso, and agreed to pay the United States government $616 million personally. Wild. That kind of money is wild. Something's wrong with the system. And we have in Congress today, I mean, this makes me laugh. The minimum wage is what, $7.35 an hour or something now? Congress wants to, Obama wants to raise it to $9 an hour. And the Republicans are fighting the raise. How can you fight a raise when your supporters like Mr. Cohen are making all this money? When the top 2%, we'll call them the top 10%, I've earned so much money over the last 47 years than the bottom 90%. These are your people, Republican America. These are your people. How can you fight the minimum wage being increased over a three-year period to $9 an hour? Not even right away. Something wrong. Something wrong everywhere. Well, does anyone want to talk about this with me, about banks? I know you like the bank issues. You talked to me about the articles I've read. You've spoken with me about the what you've heard me say on my television internet show that I do on Friday mornings. I've discussed this with many of you personally. Some of you have commented via emails that I've responded in some instances. The banks are out of control. The banks are too big to fail. The banks are too big to prosecute, but they're not too big to make all this money. And in the meantime, the majority of Americans, 90% of Americans, I'd say 99% of Americans, are getting it shoved up their butt by the banks and by our government. Got to put the blame where blame is due. Our government has not enforced regulations or had enough severe regulations imposed upon the banking industry. The banking industry is getting away with murder. They have great influence in the halls of Congress. What bothers me, and I am an Obama supporter. I voted for him twice. I think he's a great guy. I think he's been wrong on the bank issue. I think he's been wrong on the mortgage issue. Who does he have as his two top financial advisors? Two men who were bankers, financiers, investment people. They're both worth $1 billion a year or more. Nah, not worth. They don't make that. Their net worth is. These are rich men who became rich off the financial system in this country. And every decision they seem to make, from my perspective, favors the banking industry, the financial industry of this country. No, they don't seem to recognize. Maybe they don't understand. Maybe they don't know. But they do not seem to recognize that the banks are beating up the people of this country. And it's got to stop at some point, but I don't know how. It's all beyond me. Now, would someone like to talk with me? If you'd like to call and comment, agree, disagree, change the subject. The number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. I want to talk about Boston College a bit. I want to talk about religion. I wish to speak about birth control. I wish to speak about Obamacare. Now we're going to bring this all together. Boston College is a Catholic institution. It is a Jesuit school. The new Pope, Pope Francis, is a Jesuit. Jesuits are educators within the Catholic Church. They're a special order. I think around the 1600s, they came into being. They are very intelligent. They have additional education over and above that which most priests get. They are extremely knowledgeable. On the other hand, they're very doctrinaire. They interpret the Bible. There's no interpretation. What the Bible says precisely word for word is what is to be followed. You can't interpret anything out of the Bible. They would be, if they were Supreme Court judges, they would be like Scala, men who are on the conservative right, way over to the left, and not left, the right, the conservative right, who only see black and white, they don't see gray, and unfortunately, I think life is gray, not black and white. Be that as it may, you will recall when Obamacare was passed, I think in 2011, a furor arose that the Catholic hospitals, Catholic colleges, Catholic institutions were being put upon by Obamacare because there was a provision in Obamacare that contraceptives were to be provided under the policies that would be involved by an employer to the employees. Well, the Catholic, these Catholic institutions, who we never heard of before, but the religious right got them to come out. They said, hey, wait, we don't believe in birth control. I'll give them that. They've had a hard-ass position on that, I know, from the 50s, from all time, but especially in this country from the 1950s till today. We don't believe in birth control, and it's a violation of our constitutional rights, our religious belief, our freedom of religion, to compel us to provide birth control to our employees, whether Catholic or non-Catholic. And so Obamacare came up with the president came up with a compromise situation whereby the insurance companies would provide it directly, the church would not be involved, the schools would not be involved, the hospitals would not be involved. That was supposed to satisfy everybody. A couple of weeks later, though, the bishops of this country got together, the Catholic bishops, and said, we're not happy because we still don't believe in birth control, and whether directly or indirectly, it's being provided through Obamacare. You know, there comes a line. There's supposed to be separation of church and state in this country. It was Christ who said, give unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and give to God that which is God's. I'm not quoting it precisely, but you understand what I'm saying. The church has to understand they can only go so far. They don't run the country. They don't represent all the people in the country. They have an opinion. They have a belief. There are other people, other religions, that do not think as they do. So I think they're wrong in this regard. But putting that aside, Boston College was very happy. They are a Catholic institution, Jesuit run, and they did not have to provide birth control information to their student body, which includes girls, women, okay, college-age students. All right. Now, somehow through all of this, not just the employees, they banned the school, Boston College, banned any birth control being provided on campus to the students, and also banned birth control information. So now the ability of a student, whether female or male, to obtain contraceptives, to obtain other birth control devices, to obtain the morning after pill, which statistics now show 25% of college girls will take sometime in their 4 years, and to provide general information on birth control, they could not do it anymore. These things could not be on the campus of Catholic Boston College. Necessity becomes the mother of invention. The students got together and said, look, no problem. We're going to give this stuff away free out of our dormitory rooms. A bunch of them got together and they formed an organization. I forget the name of the organization. And they said, we're just going to give condoms away, and we'll have some of our people are knowledgeable, tell the students about birth control, and we'll have them chat with anyone who wants this information. We shall share. Well, of course, Boston College became aware of this and said, this is wrong. This is wrong. If we're against it, you should be against it. You're going to our school. The students decided they should have a campus referendum on the issue to see how the students felt about them providing free condoms and free birth control information if the school itself would not do so. 95% of the students voted in favor of this being permitted. They thought the college was wrong and the student body should provide that information to them and provide them with contraceptives, etc. Now Boston College, its administration, comes out and says, hey, you must cease and desist. And if you do not stop this, there's going to be consequences. They're being threatened. And in this letter, they also say, if you're coming to our college, you have to respect the college's beliefs and traditions. You recall that Boston College and other Catholic institutions beat up that portion and defeated that portion of Obamacare based on the freedom of religion argument. It just so happens that federal law and state law in this country is unanimous in saying that a college, an institution, cannot impose its religious beliefs on its students. You heard me. A college, in effect, or a Catholic college, cannot impose its beliefs on its student body. And so they're telling the kids, we don't want you to do this because we don't believe in it. And they're forgetting there is law out there, lots of law that says they can't do this. Well, the kids say, the college people, they say, I call them kids only because they're so much younger than me. I don't say it out of disrespect. And I call these women girls because they're young. They're, what, 18 to 21, 22. And for my, based on my age, they're girls, young ladies. Anyhow, I'm not being socially correct, but you get my point. The students say, hey, we have a right to express ourselves. There's something called freedom of expression, which is part of freedom of speech. And we have a right to believe religiously as we do. So what the student body has done is said, we have the same religious right you had. You didn't want to be stepped on when Obamacare said they were going to do something. We're saying to you, you can't step on us if we have different religious beliefs that permit this. And you can't impose on us your religious beliefs, even if we're Catholics and we don't want to listen to you or adhere to you. And so the lines have been drawn. The ACLU has come into this thing. There's going to be litigation. It's going to be a lawsuit of fantastic proportions, not as big as same-sex marriage, recently heard by the Supreme Court of the United States, but it's going to be almost as big, because you're going to have freedom of religion on both sides, boom, coming into conflict. You know, it's the old story. What goes around comes around. College got away with it 2 years ago. Now they're getting hit in the face with the same thing. I believe deservedly so. And I see the student body coming out on top of this issue, because there is clearly a religious right, and the college cannot tell them what to do in this regard. The number is 646-478-5731. 646-478-5731. Doesn't anyone want to talk to me? That I'm sure some of you out there, I know many of my lady friends, you had solid opinions on the birth control issue and how presently there's the attempt by the Republican right, the religious right, to beat up female society in this country on issues involving a woman's body. You've got something to say, call me up and say it on the show if you like. Also, if you want to talk about the banks and how they're screwing everybody today, look at all those charges for everything. $35 for a bounced check here in Key West, disgraceful. They charge you for ATM. They take your money out of a machine if it isn't your bank. They're doing anything they can do to make money. Let's get into a little sports for a few minutes. The Final Four is coming. And fortunately, my alma mater, Syracuse University, is going to be at the Final Four. I think this is absolutely fantastic. I have to say this about Syracuse. The Final Four is going to be this weekend, folks, Saturday night and Monday night. Syracuse, I have not been hot on them all year. They died at midseason when they were third in the country. They dropped at the end of the season to 20th in the country. They lost out of their last six league games, they lost five. Then they went into the Big East tournament. They started coming around. They won three great games in a row. Even beat Georgetown, that had crucified them during the league season. Then in the finals of the Big East 3 weeks ago, they played Louisville. Syracuse was winning, beating Louisville by 16 points at halftime, ended up losing the game by 17 points. I had no confidence in my team that they were going to go anywhere in this March Madness, the big NCAA tournament. I figured if they won the first game, they'd be lucky. They'd get knocked out at least by the second. And here we are. We are going to the Final Four. And the Syracuse basketball team never looked better than it has in the last three games in the big tournament here. It's a complete turnaround. All of a sudden, the team is playing together. They're playing great defense. Their defense is better than their offense. Absolutely fantastic basketball. I'm shocked. I'm surprised. I love it. And now I have religion. I have faith and confidence in my team. Syracuse played Michigan Saturday night. I noticed the Vegas line today. Michigan's favored by 2 points, two and a half points. We'll see. Michigan's having a great year, first great year, many a year. I'm assuming we're going to beat Michigan. Louisville's in the Final Four, Wichita State. I think Louisville gets past Wichita State Saturday and on Sunday. I'm assuming we're going to meet Louisville in the finals. And I'm going to tell you something. It's going to be one hell of a game if that's the case. Louisville's going to be favored. I think we're going to give them a game. I don't know if we're going to win. I hope we do. Now, this has been a great show tonight. I've got a minute left. I've been talking to myself, though. I don't mind talking to myself. Many of you tell me they enjoy listening. I know people are listening. Over the course of a week, approximately now, in about 2.5 months, there are approximately 2,000 people listening to this show. That's a big number. I get the numbers every week. And a lot of you listen to it when it's archived during the week, because this is run several times a day, several days a week. Those that don't listen tonight listen during the week, and more people listen during the week to the archive portion than to the live show. So the numbers are there. Call me up sometime. I've talked to some people on the show, not very many. I like to talk to people. I think tonight. The show is all over, my friend. Come back again next Tuesday night, 9 o'clock. Have a good week.